Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Did you know you can save up to 70% on the best brands just by shopping at FromRebel.com? We're talking about strollers, car seats, high chairs, espresso machines, cookware, everything you need for way less. Here's how it works. Every single day, Rebel drops thousands of new products on the site for up to 70% off. It is a constant stream of endless deals from top brands like Upa Baby, Nuna, Baby Bjorn, Breville, Nespresso, KitchenAid, Le Creuset, and more. But you have to act fast because every deal is one of a kind. So if you see something you love, make sure you add to cart fast. So stop paying full price when you don't have to. Whether it's baby gear, kitchen upgrades, or a treasure for your home you didn't know you needed, Rebel has it for way less, up to 70% less. Shop from Rebel.com and save big.
Welcome everyone to the Everyday Empires podcast. I'm here with Yash Agarwal for another one of our specials. We're going to talk about Yash going into the job market. So he's finished university now with a finance, accounting and management degree. He's got first class, he's found some passion, and we're going to figure out what motivated him to get into that particular job, how he got there, and some funny stories along the way as well. So Yash, thank you very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, yeah.
We just talked about how wild your time was at Nottingham doing fam first class.
I wouldn't describe it as wild, but
it was a lot of fun. You achieved a lot, and you importantly found your passion. You found your passion because there was a society at Nottingham that ran an equity fund that you deep dived in, which I think goes to show the power of societies. If you don't mind me touching on that, because when I was certainly doing societies at the University of York, where I went, it was seen as, if you have a passion for one of the societies, okay, do it. But very rarely do people know exactly what they want to do at 18, 19. So it was seen as something to do as part of your CV. So when you apply for jobs, very often the jobs, especially for graduate schemes, had these kind of standardized questions. How did you face a challenge and overcome it? These really boring standard questions. I really hope they didn't have those now. But being part of a society, you could talk about that and have some kind of eloquent answer. That's how we saw it. And then if you had some interest and you got a good group of you guys together, then, it's quite fun. But it sounds like actually in your particular case, you found it even more fun, so much so that you could see yourself going into a career in this.
I don't think I did societies. Look, I think there was definitely an element of, okay, I'm doing this kind of to prepare myself for the job market. But like, genuinely, I did it because I was interested in doing those things. I was like, what would be a cool experience to actually learn more. But I think after doing that, I realized I only want to do equity research, which is basically, just for everyone's reference, what I was doing at university was managing money. Like we were kind of buying different stocks and that's how we were kind of doing it. There's kind of a couple of paths you can go down if you want to do something similar. You can work at a hedge fund, you can work at an asset management firm, or you could work at a bank doing equity research, right? So in finance, the way it works is there's kind of two worlds. There's the sell side and then there's the buy side. The sell side is basically you're essentially an advisor. You're not really deploying the money. So, you know, when people say they work in investment banking or they work at an investment bank, they're essentially a sell side firm. But the buy side is, you know, when you're actually deploying assets, when you're actually making investment decisions. I kind of wanted to do equity research, whether it be on the buy side or sell side. I really wanted to do that because that was exactly what I was doing in the society, right? And look, I think everyone, you know, at university, all they were talking about was investment banking and private equity and these kind of things. But I was just like, look, I love doing this. This is exactly what I want to do. I don't really want to try anything else. You know what I mean? This is what I want to do. This is what I'm going to apply for. Obviously, like everyone else in the UK, I applied for like, whatever, like 40, 50 jobs, you know, try to see where. I obviously applied to like random jobs as well. But like my core focus was to try to get an equity research job, which, I mean, the biggest issue is when you're an international student, especially in the UK. And I think this is a massive problem in the UK, right? I think, I don't want to say it, but you feel like international students are a bit of a cash cow, you know, and like you've gone there, you've spent money, you've basically essentially assisted these cities to keep thriving because you're the one spending the money, right? Because technically speaking, most of the UK students are on student loans, etc., you know, but you're the one driving the local economy. You know what I mean? You should be given that right to work in the country, but it's not like that. It's a very difficult system. If you're an international student, it's extremely hard to get a job. You know, it's not like when you're, and I don't think a lot of people actually from the UK understand how challenging it is to actually get a job as an international student in the UK if you go to university there. Same thing for the US as well, by the way, which to me is just, it feels unfair. But look, that is the system. It is what it is, you know. I understand it from their perspective, but obviously, you know, not from your own perspective, right? Yeah, so look, I out of university, I was like, look, I honestly just want to do equity research. But honestly, COVID came around and it just completely changed everything because during COVID, we all had to come back. And then, you know, there was no real, at that time, you know, obviously it's been 4 years now, but at that time, there was no clarity whether companies could even hire you. And like even companies themselves didn't really want to commit to giving you offers because they didn't really know whether they could even have you in the country because obviously lockdowns were going on, you know, flights were like, the whole system was closed, right?
Just for context, so this is, you're looking for a job, is it July 2020? So post-graduation or when did you graduate?
No, I graduated July 2020, but I was saying like the whole process of like finding a job was really during that, you know, leading up to that, right?
I mean, March 2020. Exactly. Down here, right? So you're
exactly.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So basically that whole option was pretty much closed for me. You know, my dad works in finance and, you know, he's, I had a conversation with him. I was like, look, this is what I want to do, but obviously it's hard, you know, because in Dubai, it's not like the UK, you know, there's no real graduate program here. Yeah, and the system is not as structured as it is in the UK or the US or other big markets. Especially equity research here is a very thin job because the market itself is not massive. It's not as liquid. So you don't really have that many equity research jobs going around, right? Yeah. So obviously, you know, he introduced me to someone. You know, I didn't really know about this, to be honest. I really didn't know about it. And I remember I was in bed and at like, this is after university, you know, so you can imagine I'm just like, just chilling, you know, I'm not really like really thinking much. Like, you know? So I think I got a call at 12:30 from my to be boss. At the time, I didn't know, obviously, but like called me saying, you know, can you come in for an interview? We want to try to see if, you know, we can do an internship. And it was like an unpaid internship. You know what I mean? He was like, look, come in, interview. Let's see if we, you know, we want to have you on our team or not. And look, I have to be there at 1 o'clock and it's 12:30, right? So I've already just gone into, okay, how do I now like prepare myself for this in the next 30 minutes? What's the most efficient way to do this? I felt, it's funny. I always try to, you know, my sister will tell you this. I was rejecting finance for the longest time because honestly, growing up, that was weirdly my life. You know, I was sitting in the car with my dad and I heard EBITDA like when I was like 11 years old, you know, like I was hearing these extremely complex like management issues and like problems and I'm fucking hearing CapEx, you know, like what the fuck, you know, when I was a kid. But I obviously was rejecting at the time, but now I really want to do it, you know. But, you know, he kind of, and I joke about it now, but I don't think he realized it, but he conditioned me almost to be a professional, you know? Like, I knew instantly what I had to do. I shaved. I was in a suit, ready to go. I made sure I researched exactly this company through and through, went to the website, opened up the fact sheet, looked through, okay, what are their holdings? I quickly looked through, and this is all happening in 30 minutes, by the way. Yeah? Like, I've looked through their holdings and I've gone to each of the holdings and I've like understood the company a little bit. And yeah, I'm good to go. I enter the office and I get on with the interview. And, you know, it's funny, my colleague now, like my former colleague, when he said he was interviewing me, you know, he thought he was interviewing me for a full-time role, not as an intern, you know? Because over here, generally speaking, most of the interns that you get, it's not really like the UK or the US. They're not really fighting for jobs, you know? It's just a very different system out here. Generally speaking, it's someone's friend that's just his friend's kid that's just just interning just to get some experience. That's really it. But look, I was ready to go, you know what I mean? I was like, it's time to lock in and move, you know? So I started my internship and I really like went balls to the wall. Obviously, I didn't think of it at the time, but like I saw this as a really good opportunity for me to learn. And honestly, I really put my head down and I just used this opportunity to the full. I remember I designed their entire website within this internship. I basically revamped their entire website. I started basically operating like an analyst, like as part of the team, where I was pitching ideas, etc. And yeah, no, I was fully involved. But yeah, no, dude, it was a tough journey of it was a trial by fire, you know? Cause you know, look, you think university prepares you, as you know, university does not prepare you for the fucking corporate world. Okay. It does not.
Tell me about day one.
Day you walk one.
In, you got your suit on, you got your tie done up. Freshly shaven.
Dude, man, I was, the doors required like an access and I was just standing outside because I was like, bro, like, I'm not going to fucking, like, who am I going to message this boss and be like, yo, can you let me? Like, I'm just waiting outside and then suddenly someone just happened to open the door. Like, what are you doing here? I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I sat down at my desk and yeah, I just got on. Honestly, I couldn't tell you what I did on day one. You know? I really couldn't tell you. But no, I think I remember, so for those who don't know what a DCF is, it's just a form of valuation where you basically build like a financial model.
Discounted cash flow, right?
Yeah, DCFs. Discounted cash flow for those who may not know. But essentially, that's a very important valuation methodology where you essentially build out a financial model, right? And what this essentially is you take the company's business and just basically put it in numbers, right? What you're trying to do is you're trying to understand their long-term growth story and put that into and translate that into assumptions where you can see what that kind of looks like, right? I don't want to get, we can get into the details if you want to, but that's basically roughly what it is. And obviously, look, I studied a bit of it at university and like I knew what it was and I knew what a WACC was and I knew what it was, but I've never built one, right? And, you know, you think at an internship, you know, they'd be like, oh, like, you know, here's how you go about doing it. Step one, nah. My boss was like, all right, pick a company, get on with it. I was like, what? Like, what do you want me to do? Like, I was like, I didn't even know where to start, you know? And I was like, okay, look, I know where I can find some of the past models. So I was like, okay, let me see how they've built it. I just started going, okay, one by one, comparing and building the same way, right? So I remember the company I was pitching was an Egyptian white cheese manufacturer. And so white cheese is a very specific Egyptian thing. Okay. It's a specific cheese that they have at home. It's a very like cultural thing. And dude, I love this company. Oh my fucking God. I still think about this company. I follow their share price today, bro. I fucking love that company, dude. Essentially, dude, I'm building this model. And I remember the night before I'm meant to present this. My model is not fucking balancing, okay? Like, my model is not balancing. Something's fucked up, you know, in this model. I have no idea what the fuck is going on, okay? I called my colleague, you know, he's a good friend of mine now, but like, called my colleague, like, bro, like, I'm fucking dying. I don't know what the fuck I'm gonna do, right? So I went over to his house, you know, he walked me through it. Like, you know, still, at the end of the day, he wasn't gonna do it for me, you know what I mean? He just told me, like, okay, this is what you kind of need to look at, this is what's wrong, but figure it out for yourself, you know, this is your issue, figure it out yourself, you know? In a way that I would learn, you know. And so yeah, dude, I presented that pitch, and dude, we bought that company. We did really well on it. We made like 40% like a couple of months. Yeah,
damn.
And we did really well on that company. And so what ended up happening was, I think I was there. I think I joined that internship in September, October of 2020. I think I interned till like, I was only meant to do a month, but I just ended up doing 2 or 3 months because I think they just really appreciate the value I was adding. And look, that's kind of how I operated. Was like, how can I make the people who are above me, how can I make their life easier? One, I want to ask as many questions, be as curious, and learn as much as possible without being too much of a burden. And I just really got stuck into it, you know? I think by the end of that experience, they were like, look, if you want to come and join us, there is that option, you know? I pretty much took it up in February of the next year, so 2021. I joined them. And dude, different experience. Because look, I think a lot of people don't understand. Yes, an internship gives you a pretty good idea what the job is, but once you start the job, your life changes. It's not the same. You know what I mean? Like, I was literally speaking to a friend now who's just entering the corporate rat race, if you like. And I was telling her, I was like, look, man, like, when you join, your perspective on everything changes. Because the first time, at least from Dubai, it's the first time a paycheck is hitting you. You know, like in London, obviously, you know, people work different jobs and stuff. But in Dubai, can't actually, at that time, you weren't allowed to work under the age of 18 anyways, you know? For me, the second I got my first paycheck, I was like, okay, I now understand the value of money. You know what I mean? Like, I know how much effort it takes to make this much amount of money. My life really changed when I started the job.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
It was tough, dude. It was very tough because I was in an environment where we basically had, the structure was, there was the head of asset management, there was me, and there was two other guys. One was a more senior guy, and the other guy was kind of, he was kind of two to three years more experienced than me, right? He obviously been there for a couple more years than me. And, you know, these guys were, one, they're obviously very smart guys, you know, like they're not fucking sharp motherfuckers, you know, like, like I'm sitting there like, dude, the way these guys are, quick mental maths, you know, they're able to quickly, you know, understand concepts and just go, you know, I could just tell the speed that these guys are processing information is just different, you know, like it's not the same. And the way they understand concepts is very different to how other people do, right? But dude, it was super challenging because I felt like I was in the deep end, you know, without any help, you know, because I'm there 21 years old covering companies. Like, what the fuck do I know? You know, like, what the fuck do I know? You know, and dude, that first 6 months was fucking rough because my boss kind of, dude, I really appreciate him now, but at that time, it was tough, you know, because he had very high expectations of me, you know, like he expected me to basically be a complete analyst, you know, and generally I'm working on the buy side at this time, right? I'm managing money. I think we had a $300 million fund. He expected me a complete analyst. And generally speaking, when you're on the buy side, you come with 2 years of experience or two to three years of experience. You have some training before you've actually joined this job. I had zero training, right? I'm sitting here covering companies. And honestly, I really didn't know what I was doing, to be completely honest with you, you know? It was really fucking hard. And I think one story that really summarizes everything, you know the story, is I was building a model on this exchange, a stock exchange, essentially. They were publicly traded. And I built the model out, and I got like this, I built my DCF. I got like a fair, like a target price for what I think this should be worth, like the share price, what I think it should be worth. And the upside that I was getting was pretty big. It was like 40, 50%. I was like, this is a great idea. And I sat down, pitched it, you know, and we did everything. We went cell by cell to the assumptions. It was a 2-3 hour meeting, and like we've done everything. Now we reached the DCF. He's like, something's wrong in your DCF. And he didn't even like, dude, just literally, I swear to God, I just put the tab on. He's like, something's wrong with the DCF. He's like, this doesn't make sense. And I was like, dude, I didn't understand. You know what I mean? At that time, I didn't really understand. I didn't even know how he even put that shit together. You know, now, obviously, when I look at something, I know when it's wrong, you know, because logically I know how it works. I know when it's wrong. And he slammed his book and just like slammed the door behind him and just walked out. Okay. And bro, I was like, fuck, this is bad, you know? He came in the next day, bro, and I had an email with a warning saying, if you don't improve your performance, you're getting fired, you know, like straight up. And I was like, bro, what the fuck? I'm 6 months in, I'm 21 years old, I'm doing a job that's like, I'm probably doing better than most people are doing in this given situation with a given amount of like training, you know? And man, I was crushed, bro. I was fucking crushed, dude. Like, it was bad, you know? And then he called me and my colleague in, and dude, it was like a glass door, yeah? So you can kind of see from outside. And dude, me and him are sitting, and dude, he fucking went in, bro. He was like, hey, we have a fucking fiduciary duty. You can't just fucking do this. I was like, dude, my colleague was tearing up. I was about to tear up, you know? I was just holding it together, but like, it was bad, dude. It was really bad. And I remember right after that, he walked out after he fucking finished demolishing us. And I went to the bathroom and just cried. I literally just cried. I was like, fuck, man. Like, I'm not good enough for this. You know, like, I'm not at this level. And obviously, everyone feels imposter syndrome. You know, this is very normal in any job you do. You know, you're going to feel a certain degree of, I am not good enough for this. You know, like, oh, these people are way smarter than me, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but like, for me, it was exasperated, right? Like, for me, it was much worse because everyone around me is way more experienced. I mean, there's not a single person that can relate to me in that office, you know? And yeah, dude, there was a good period where I remember I used to drive into work and I used to just sit in my car. And like, this is like 8:50. I'm like downstairs in my car and I'm just like, fuck, dude, I don't want to go in today. You know, like, dude, like, I don't want to see his face. I'm fucking scared of him. You know, like, I'm really scared of this guy. I was like, fuck it, dude. Just got to do it. You know, I went upstairs and fucking got on with it, you know? So, but that experience, like, look, obviously this sounds negative, but it really isn't though, because he put expectations on me, and rightly so, you know, that pushed me to be better. But dude, it was, I don't think any of my friends realized how bad it was, you know, like it was, my parents obviously knew, but like, I was like, it was tough for me, you know, like, I felt out of my depth and I was struggling and I was like, fuck, man, what am I doing here, you know? But yeah, dude, that was my first kind of like, that was my first like 6 months on the job, you know? I was fucking struggling, you know? But it's just how it is, you know? When you start your first job, it's tough. It's not easy. It doesn't matter what you do. It's just never easy, you know? Yeah. And that's a reality you have to be ready for, but you've got to keep going, you know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Putting your boss's expectations aside, because they're... someone's expectation is always quite a difficult thing to analyze, because it could be from a perspective of, which I think was the case here, where they can clearly see a lot of potential in you and you made a little mistake or whatever, so they're coming down hard, and that's coming from a position of like, I want you to do well, I want to build you up, I want to give you the skill set so you can be better and do more. There's other expectations which are just unrealistic. So putting all that aside, I think a lot of people entering the workplace right now have that expectation of themselves that they want to, you know, impact loads and do loads of things and like change the course of the business model and, you know, like influence everything. Whereas like when I walked into the office, you know, I worked for a large accounting firm. I was just like, I'm just happy to just, you know, write my first email. Like, let's just get that done first. then let's try not to give like the wrong advice to a multinational firm or FTSE 250 firm or 100 firm. Let's just make sure their stock price doesn't fall. And then the next step was, okay, maybe I can start doing some work. And that took me 6 months because I was chartered accountant, tax advisor. So there's a technical element to all this, which you can't even write a report until you know what you're fucking writing about. Yeah. So it's obviously similar with yourself. You can't do the analysis until you know how to draft a proper DCF, a proper report, do the analysis that sits underneath it, and then obviously pitch your idea. Because you've got to convince, you know, someone who's managing $300 million, hundreds of millions of dollars to buy or allocate a portion of that fund to your idea.
Yeah.
And your idea either works or it doesn't. Like, it's not a...
Yeah.
There is an iterative scale.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, you predict 40% upside and it does 35%. Okay, people are probably pretty happy. If it does 10% upside, you're still up, but it could have done better, right? So there's a consequence to your work. But I feel a lot of people coming into the workplace want to do all these amazing, impactful things, but they haven't got the craft. And so when you say, okay, you've got to go away and work on this craft for 6 months, a year, 3 years, maybe even 5 years, and then maybe you can impact, there's like a misalignment of expectations there. How do you feel about that?
Everyone thinks they're going to do a lot when they enter the job. The second they start their job, they know what the vibe is. You know, they're just trying to survive. You know, like, look, again, this is a very different perspective because this is finance and this is like high finance. So this is very like performance-based job, you know, like it's a high performance job. So, you know, it's game day every day. You know what I mean? Like you've got to fucking be on it, you know? I think you're right. Like, I don't think you should walk into it trying to fucking change the world, you know, like, cause that's just not going to happen. No one trusts you. No one's going to do anything. Like, no one's going to give you the keys to the castle. You know, it's just not going to happen. But what I think you should be doing when you enter these jobs is shut the fuck up, learn, listen, and just like wait for your opportunities. You know, you will get chances to put your hand up and be like, you know what, I'm going to take that on, you know, but realistically speaking, get the basics right first, you know, like understand the job, understand the needs of the job. So, you know, I think just for context, I think for the people kind of listening, what my kind of daily life looked like, right? It was Mondays. It would be, we kind of rotated between each other, us three. It would be, we'd go to the boss, pitch an idea. Whoever has the best idea wins. We've basically spent the week doing the research to present this business on the Thursday, because Thursday was the last day of the working week for us in Dubai back then. So I had basically on Monday to Thursday to do the entire research for the company, build a model, build a view, and have an opinion on this, right? That's not easy, okay? That's not easy at all, okay? For the first company, he gave me a couple of weeks. But after that was 1 week on, you know, like 1 week, execute, get on with it, you know? And dude, the process is, okay, I get the company. I've been doing research generally, you know, I have my portfolio. I know what I'm looking at. So I come up with an idea, I pitch it to him. The second I pitch it to him, he's like, he tells me yes, no. And this is, by the way, it's a 10 second conversation. You know, I have to sell it in 10 seconds because I'm going to spend the next 5 days doing this, right? But in 10 seconds, it decides my next 5 days, you know?
Wow.
So he's like, okay, yeah, go for it. And then, you know, I get on with it. So, which is basically, I'll sit down, start. My process used to be a bit different. I used to actually pull out 5 years of annual reports and actually just read how this business has evolved over the last 5 years. I would then go into a deep dive of just understanding the business, like actually researching and understanding this business properly, and especially spending a lot of time in the market, understanding who are its competitors, what makes this company special or not so special, where is it, what are its strengths, what are its weaknesses. And then, you know, once I kind of have a decent idea on the research, I kind of spread the numbers out and I see, okay, does this story that I understood from the last 4 or 5 years, how's the business historically performed, right? Like, has it, you know, have the revenues been growing at a decent CAGR? How the margin, like, has the margin profile improved, etc.? I'll understand the balance sheet and look at, okay, what's the kind of liquidity on the balance sheet? You know, how is the working capital of this business? I'll just kind of form a basic historical view of the business, right? Now, once I've done the kind of, I looked at the research, built the historicals, understood the historicals, I would then basically go into actually building assumptions. So what that, in very simple terms, and by the way, building a model is not hard. I don't know why everyone cracks it up to be some like fucking next level, that you are some genius if you can do it. It's really not that hard. It just requires a decent level of knowledge of accounting. And obviously just you have to be a bit persistent, you know what I mean, with it, because it's not like it's not hard, but it requires effort. You know, to do a good model requires effort. To build these assumptions, very simply, all you're trying to do is, okay, let's take a clothing manufacturer, right? I know, how does this business work? How does it make money? In general, it's, I sell this t-shirt to a customer, right? At this particular price, right? So how many t-shirts have I sold in the year for the average price gives me the revenue, right? That's literally all I'm building, right? All I'm going to try to do is try to estimate, okay, do I think the price of the t-shirt will go up over time for XYZ reason? Now, that could go up because, let's say, for example, there's a new competitor in the market who's cut prices. So I think, you know what, they probably will follow that price pattern, maybe drop those prices. Do I think the volumes are going to increase because they're going to put in new retail stores? So naturally, the volume should logically go up. I do that same kind of exercise with the costs. So, okay, where do they source their raw materials from? Fabric, etc. What's the price of these fabrics? And that's kind of how you go to that whole process and basically project out their entire forward, like the next 5 years of what their business should do based on your story, based on what you think this business will look like in the next 5 years, right? And then you kind of build a value, you build a DCF, and then you can kind of get a value from it. The reason I kind of gave you this kind of long tangent explanation was to kind of give you a context that this is not a simple thing to do straight out of university. This is not simple. I had put up my hand and said, look, guys, I think we're doing this entire process wrong. I think don't hate me, Jay, but like, this is true. And I told them, look, I think we're very good at, you know, our research, and I think the quality of conversations we have, you know, all of this crescendos into like an IC, which is an investment committee meeting, where we all just sit for 3-4 hours and we go cell by cell into the model. I present the business, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, we have a good understanding of these businesses. We're doing good analysis, but I think where we're missing is to generate alpha, or, you know, in very simple terms, alpha is your performance, the quantum of your performance over the benchmark, right? So for example, if I'm comparing myself against the S&P 500, let's say the S&P 500 returned 10%, right? But my fund did 15%. So I have 5 percentage points of alpha, right? That's basically, for a fund manager, that's your...
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast12. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast12. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
If you want to beat the index, right, or the benchmark. And I said, look, the best way we can do this is actually let's build up sector expertise. So I was allocated the worst fucking industries. honestly, I'm saying they're the worst, but like, dude, they're hard industries to cover as equity research because they're very like technical and very specific. They're not like a clothing business, you know? So I was covering financials, so banks. Dude, banks are like, to cover a bank, like, man, dude, I don't even know how I did it, bro. Like honestly, looking back at it, I was like, how did I even like survive this? Because, dude, it's like a different language. You know, they're speaking English, but like, You know, like, I don't know, like, what is a NIM? You know, like, what is a NIM? What is a, what is your CASA ratio? You know, like, what the fuck is this shit? You know, I don't fucking know this, you know? And I was just like, what is this, you know? And so I was doing financials. I was doing commodities, which, dude, if anyone covers commodities, they know, dude, to build a model on a commodity is like the most retarded model to build, because you spend this fucking day or two building this model and your entire model is contingent on that one price estimate you have for the commodity, the underlying commodity. Dude, I don't know what gold will do in 5 years. What the fuck, you know? I move it by $5, my fair value goes up by 20-30%. You're like, what the fuck, you know? Like, so yeah, I was covering these really fucking hard industries, you know, like, especially for a kid with zero experience, that's not easy, you know, like, but it's funny because that was a very good opportunity for me, because I actually picked up on very specific technical things that a lot of people don't actually ever look at, you know. Financials is a very big niche, but understanding it is a very big advantage, you know, and it proved to be an advantage when I worked in banking later on, you know, when I did a transaction on a consumer finance company, you know. So yeah, that was kind of my experience. And, you know, coming back to your initial question is, yes, like, you know, you're not going to change the world or anything, but just from that experience that I just described to you, it's very obvious you need to just sit down and learn, you know, like, you need to do the best you can do, be curious, ask questions, you know, make sure you come in with the right attitude, and just try to always think, how can I add value? You know, what can I do? Dude, I was like, you know, we were having a situation where our performance against our alpha was getting killed, because basically the benchmark, they included these two companies. I'm not going to name them, but like, it's public, but I'm not going to name them. But like, they included these two companies in the benchmark, dude, that they were just crushing. Like, they were going up 100% a year, you know? But that was like, it was unfair, because technically speaking, like, those companies, we studied them, and there's no logic to how they were moving, you know? Like, there was no, like, we did, like, our own analysis, and we were like, dude, this market cap is off by, like, hundreds of millions, you know? Like, this is not accurate. I don't know what the fuck the market is doing, but this does not make any sense at all, because on a actual basis, the value that it's trading at is insane. It's like, bonkers, you know? But we were changing our index. So, dude, I basically went through the process of contacting S&P, contacting Moody's, anyone that basically gives these benchmarks, right? Not Moody's, MSCI. And I contacted them saying, look, we're trying to change our benchmark. Let's try to make a benchmark. And I literally created our benchmark with this guy, and I negotiated the price. And, you know, I was doing all of this stuff straight out of university, you know? And then by the end of my first year, I was managing my own portfolio for a client. And I was overseeing one of our funds, you know, like the portfolio administration for that fund. I was overseeing the entire thing. So that whole journey of that first 6 months being really hard to the end being good was only down to me just being patient, letting the opportunities come, but making sure whatever is asked of me, I do exactly that. I don't try to do it to an insane level or anything, but I'm executing exactly what I'm being asked to do, and I'm trying to do it the best way I can do it, you know? And that's it. That's all you need to do. You're not going to change the fucking world, you know? Like, just stay focused, you know? Stay focused on what you're learning. That's it.
I think those are very wise words, and I think it's words where I wish more people listen to them more and more.
Yeah.
And because I see a lot of great young people come through my doors who want to set up businesses, and I kind of ask them, okay, well, what happened in your early career? And they just go, the corporate world didn't suit me, you know, like, it was too much pressure, or didn't like my boss, he was a bit of an asshole, or the politics were crazy. And I just go, look, with the corporate world, there are obviously going to be pros and cons. The con side, there's obviously going to be office politics. I mean, when you get a large group of people, even a smallish group of people into one area, there's always going to be those kind of elements for whatever reason. There's always going to be, to some extent, a manager that's not performing, right? So there's going to be pressure on them that's going to create emotional issues. There are people that just aren't very nice. I mean, the corporate world doesn't mean you have to have really nice, competent people. There are some really terrible, incompetent people that have managed to get to a certain job. And you sit there sometimes, you go, you earn three times more than me. you can't even open up an Excel spreadsheet. You just gave me like hassle because this cell in this spreadsheet is wrong, but you don't even know how to change it yourself. Like, why are you there and I'm here? And the frustration comes from, you feel like you should be progressing a lot more and be further ahead than other people. But you just started out, as you say, you just come out of university or you've just done 1 or 2 years. I think what helped me was that there was a qualification barrier. So I literally couldn't progress until I had this chartered accountancy thing. And they just said, look, when you get it, then we can talk about progression. Up until that point, you're a junior guy. So then you understand, you have a clear objective and you achieve it. And then you can start moving up the greasy pole. But then once you start moving up, you realize that your technical ability gets up there pretty quickly. And what's going to get you above into senior management and beyond, and maybe even ownership, are the softer side of things. You know, how to manage people, how to manage clients, how to pitch good ideas and get them through the processes of whatever's internal at the time. And you just navigate the system. And then you find that the people that are actually at the top aren't necessarily the most competent. They tend to be people that are very good at making money for the business and very good at generally managing either projects or people. The best can do both, and they tend to be the CEOs and the big money guys. So what I really want people to get out of what I said, which I completely agree with, is that you will have tough times at work, maybe not necessarily as tough as you had it, because it sounds like you have some pretty tough people around you, but you will have someone have a go at you at work, because not everything's going to be perfect. And if they want you to succeed, they're having a go at you. If you're not getting feedback, that's the worry. If you're just sitting there and kind of doing your job and humming along, that's the concern. You should be constantly pushing yourself. The pro in a corporate world is that you will get constant feedback for sure, because it's part of the whole process. But more importantly, you'll see quite a nice big picture. You'll see what other people are doing. You'll see how you fit into the situation. And yeah, you might be a small cog in a bigger wheel, but you can still see the big wheel. You're still part of the whole project, and you can see what you do impacts everything. So once you've got that big picture, then you can start to think about, okay, should I progress in this world, or should I change into a different industry, or should I change into a different role within the whole company, or should I do my own thing, you know, whatever. But you have that element of professionalism or standards or of understanding or processes. But that fucking takes time, man. Like, you have to sit there for a good few years to understand. Like, you can't pick it up in 2 months. There are a lot of young people that do listen to the podcast and do listen to the content. But I really want them to feel that if they're going to go into that big corporate world, or even into a medium-sized company and want to make an impact, you can do that. You might not change the business model or the bottom line, but you can help your team in a material way. As you said, from your side, it's from revamping the website through to, you know, changing how they analyze companies. It's just going to be the equivalent for other people. And I just want people to understand that they're not going to walk into a firm and smash it. They're going to probably do things wrong, probably all the time for the first couple of months. I mean, certainly I did. Maybe I'm the only one that did.
No, we've all been there, bro.
I'm getting worried now.
I have a funny story for you. Dude.
Go on.
I have a very funny fuck up. Okay, so, so we were basically doing like this conference. Okay, like we normally. So when you're working on the buy side, normally what happens is when you're covering stocks, companies will come and like do meetings, like one-on-one meetings with investors, etc. You know. So there was a conference that was organized where we were doing like 8 meetings back to back for like 3 days straight, you know, like, and it's literally 8 meetings hour each, you know, your whole work day is literally you're on call for the whole day, you know, just listening to these companies talk about what's going on with the business, what they're expecting for the future, et cetera, et cetera. And so for whatever reason, okay, my audio wasn't working on my desktop, okay, and I saw toll free on like the Zoom thing, right? I think we were using WebEx for this conference, and I just dialed the number. Like, I just dialed this number, and every call I was joining for the next 3 days, for whatever, 8 hours a day, I was just on the phone, okay? As opposed to like joining the audio through the video platform, right? And we used to get like this monthly phone bill. I think you can see what's going. We used to get this monthly phone bill thing, and fuck, I saw my phone bill, and dude, it was fucking crazy. It was like my 1 month salary.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I was like, my 1 month salary, you know? I was like, fuck, bro, what have I done, right? And I've seen this amount, and I'm thinking, do I tell them or not? Because do they kind of just it, this is kind of like auto generated, so it just gets sent out. You know, no one really like kind of looks at it, but obviously, you know, it's a massive like someone will end up like bringing this up, right? And I turn to my colleagues like around, I'm both like bro, look at this, and do they fucking die laughing? Okay, they die laughing. And I'm like, fuck, what do I do now? Because, dude, I'm not laughing. This is a serious problem, right? Like, this is company money I basically spent, right? And I was like, look, man, I fucking got to confront this now. So I walk up into my boss's office. He's like, what do you want? And I'm like, and he's like, just close the door behind me. Yeah, so this happened. And it's like a massive fucking bill, okay? And, dude, he looked at me, okay? Dead silence. He just looked at me, okay? And I'm like, I'm waiting. Okay? Like, there's a fucking, the hammer is about to drop, right? And he just looks outside the window, you know, nice fucking view of Sheikh Zayed Road. Okay? He's looking outside and he's like, he turns back to me, just dies laughing. Okay? And he's like, well, you're fucked. Yeah. These fuckers are going to charge you. Like, you're not going to make this money, right? And dude, he was like, it's fine. I'll take care of it. Okay. Like, I'll deal with it. And we kind of negotiated something, but I still got something cut out of my salary because of it, you know? But that's a big fuck up, you know? Like, to me, it was a big fuck up. It sounds like a very small fuck up when you look at it from the outside, but these things are bubbles, you know? Every small thing is a bubble. But, you know, coming to what you were really talking about is you're absolutely fucking bang on, dude. You need to, like, do the small things right, you know, which is come in on time, you know, make sure you're the last one to leave. I mean, I know that sounds cosmetic, but if you're the last one to leave, don't just wait there, right? Try to be doing something. Like, try to actually like find another way to add value. Don't waste the time. Like, being the last one to leave does not mean you just sit there and do nothing. It means you're using that time to either prepare for the next day. You're using that time to try to think of something that you didn't have the time to do whilst you were going through your workday, right? So I think it's fundamental. When you start your job, dude, it's going to be hard. It's going to be like, it's not going to be easy. You know, like if it was easy, these wouldn't be competitive jobs. You know what I mean? There's a reason why it's designed and super selective, because they're challenging. You know, they're not simple. You need to be ready to have bad situations and mistakes happen, and you just have to roll with the punches a bit. You know, like you just got to keep going. And dude, the outcomes you get are phenomenal. You know, like I feel like after 1 year I learned so much. You know, I don't think genuinely day in day out all I'm doing is just learning about companies. And I at that time at least I can claim I pretty much knew something about every single company that's publicly traded in the MENA region. You know, I can say that with confidence. You know, you can name me any company, I can tell you a little bit about all of them. Okay, like I know all of them. I used to have this much knowledge that, you know, to do a comp set, I could just like, you ask me that, you tell me the industry, I'll do the comp set in my head. You know, I know exactly what who's publicly traded, and like, I can just do it, you know? So it gives you like, it's a challenge, yes, you know, but like, you've got to go through it. Like it's the process, you know, you have to just go through it. And it's going to make you better. It will make you better for sure. You know, it's just a case of you making, again, the most of the opportunity, and really putting your head down and trying to be the best version of yourself, you know? Mm. People appreciate people that are trying hard. You know, it's really not about how good you are. You can be, you know, there are people that I've seen that have joined with me that are fucking amazing. They're years ahead of me, you know? But like, it's a case of what do you do to compete, you know?
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
It's just a case of you try your best and people appreciate that. You have a good attitude, people appreciate that. But if you come in with like a, I'll just try, you know, like I'll just whatever, it's just a whatever deadline, you know, just got to get this out of the way. No, you've got to take ownership of what you're doing. You know, once you take ownership of what you're doing, it's a lot better.
I think it's really interesting because what would you say to someone who is feeling a little bit disaffected with their job? And I'll give you context because I think a lot of young people, especially nowadays, that have come out of university or even their school leavers, and university is a question nowadays, which I think is a good thing. And they're sort of going, right, I'm going to apply for jobs and kind of have an interest over here. But maybe they don't get anything in that space, but they get a job in a completely different industry and they're doing it because perhaps it's convenient. It's a job down the road. It's for a medium-sized firm and they go in. It's not what they wanted to do, but at the end of the day, they've got a job, they've got some money coming in and they're working. They've got some experience. And because it's so competitive now to get even, I mean, the graduate schemes, even when I was applying, you know, 10 years ago, you had single digits percentage success rate for even, you know, the mildest quote unquote, or you know, middle of the road in terms of prestige, quote unquote, graduate schemes. I mean, let alone nowadays. I mean, it must be 2 or 3%, 1%, you know, success rate for a lot of these grad schemes. So a lot of the working force is going into jobs that they probably don't necessarily want or see as their top 3 or 4. So it's natural, I think, for people to get a bit disaffected in their first year, similar to how you kind of felt in your first year at uni. It's like, I didn't really want to be here, but you took that process and you're like, well, I'm here now. I'll make the most of it. How do people start that journey for them when they go into the office, they're not really super happy, but you know what? They'll get on with it. How do they do that?
Dude, it's hard. I mean, look, I think obviously, ideally, you want to be doing something you want to be doing, you know? But I've seen this a lot of the times. A lot of people have meandered their way to actually what they wanted to do, you know what I mean? Because it's not easy, like you said. But look, it's easy to say retrospectively, and it's very hard to do in, like, you know, when you're actually going through the process. But I have seen that people who have diverse experiences are actually the best in corporate environments. And what I mean by that is, you know, let's say you wanted to work in investment banking, right? But you couldn't get into an investment bank. If you went down the route of doing, I don't know, like you worked at a big four, which is normally actually what ends up happening a lot of the times, you know, you either went to a big four or you, I don't know, worked at an accounting firm or whatever. You were somewhat tangentially around that kind of thing, right? I promise you, just stick in and actually take that opportunity, because you will pick up skills that other people won't have when you actually get to the job you want to do. And, you know, sometimes maybe you'll actually fall in love with what you're doing. You know, it's a bit of you, as long as you get stuck in, things just kind of work out in a way, you know? So yes, you're going to be sometimes pushed to do things you don't want to do, but you've just got to make the best out of these situations. And I think that's how I've always lived my life. And I think that's how, for me, it's worked. And I think that's how it should be. You know, as long as you push yourself and you really try to do the best you can do, things will work out naturally. You know, and you won't realize it, but you're learning something every day. Once you join a job, you are learning something every day, even the smallest of things. For example, you know, how do I like organize my folders, managing my emails, very basic things, you know, but that will change you fundamentally to prepare you better for these other jobs, you know. Look, for my in my particular situation, I was doing what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? It wasn't really a case of like, I wasn't doing what I wanted to do. But I've seen from experience, retrospectively, a lot of my friends that who ended up doing things they didn't want to do and then finally got to their jobs, massive leg up, massive advantage. Super, super, super important, you know, because that skill set is unique. There's a value to that skill set, you know? So that's how you should think is, look, yes, it's not what I want to do, but I'm just going to make the most of it, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's well said. I think a little controversial question. I know I said I was going to finish on the last question, but you've got to be going, Yash.
In what way, bro?
Professionally.
Got you.
There's a lot of, I think, again, young people who are coming into the workforce and they're seeing their job as kind of one part of their overall life. They're seeing work-life balance as being quite a crucial element for them. So their job kind of has to work for them in terms of timing flexibility, hybrid working, maybe even remote working completely. And the level of tasks, you know, can't go beyond sort of working outside of a 9-to-5 kind of environment. They can go and do what they want to do, which I think sounds probably how it should work. But you know, you and I both know, if you want to really progress and get up there, you probably have to go beyond that 9-to-5. Which I think, even I mean, back in my day, I mean, I think we'll use the term Gen Z because it's the reference point. But you are part of the Gen Z environment. I'm more millennial. There's only 7 years between us, but I think you're 99 born. I'm 92 born. Yeah. Right. So with even though we're only 7 years, we're talking across generations.
Yeah.
And I really want to understand, and we've agreed with a lot of things. I don't think we've disagreed with a lot in this conversation.
No.
But I want to understand, because your reference point's better, the culture environment where you're young. We've talked about you wanted to hone your craft. The quicker you hone that craft, i.e. the harder you work, the more you'll progress. But when we see people coming into the workplace, I mean, I've had personal experience with this in my companies. There seems to be that lack of, like, I want to do more than what's been given to me. I want to be more helpful. I want to add more value. I want to change, like, what we're doing. I want to think about it more. It's part of what I do. They just come in, do a set of tasks, and leave, which you can't begrudge them for. But at the same time, certainly as an employer, I'm sitting here being like, Who's pushing the boundaries of where they want to be so I can, you know, mentor them better, do more with them, give them more tasks? And I sort of sit here and be like, there's only really a handful of people in the firm that I have that are really doing that. And they're all older. The younger guys, certainly when I entered the workforce, I was like, first day I was like, how do I get to the top guy's job? Like, give me a process and I'll follow this. And they were like, it's going to be really hard. It's probably going to take you 12 to 15 years to become a good partner at a big four accounting firm or a large accounting firm. These are the things you've got to do, and these are the things you've got to target. If you do some of those quicker, you can maybe bring those 12 to 15 years down to 8 to 10, but it's fucking hard. And I go, okay, well, I'm ambitious, let's go for it. I think there are a lot of people, certainly from the millennial generation and certainly older than me, who think that focus on the 9-to-5, the flexibility, the hybrid working, demonstrates a lack of drive and a lack of ambition. Do you think that's correct?
Okay, so this it's a big question, huh? So look, it's a bit my experience is a bit different because, again, the jobs that I have worked so far are high performance jobs. So by definition, everyone working those are generally very type A and super, like, you know, like, very into what they're doing, you know. Now, whilst I say that, I think my opinion on this is, I think it's hard if you don't, like, when you're starting off your job, at least when you're not in the office, because it's really hard to make those human connections. And look, I know this is a very standard argument that everyone makes when it's, you know, it's against the working from home. Look, I honestly, when I was working, I would fight for working from home for a couple of days. You know, like we used to basically work from home for like one day of the week, you know. But the value when you're starting off your career to actually be in the office is super, like it's, I can't explain it to you. You know what I mean? Because there are situations that you're hearing, there are conversations that you're hearing, that you're learning from. There are things that are happening around you that obviously you wouldn't really get if you were just at home. You're in the office, you're in that environment, you're learning a lot more, you know, and you're really able to build a relationship, especially with senior guys. So, you know, they can like kind of give you more of their time. Because if you're working from home, why would, it's not like they're going to call you to like have this conversation. You know, if you're around them, you're in the elevator, you know, you build up a bit of a rapport with these guys, and you know, they don't mind taking out the time and explaining to you more things. So personally, for me, I think a kind of hybrid between, you know, I think the majority of the time should be in the office, but I think for sure, you know, there should be a day in the week where, you know, you're allowed to go work from home, you know? But again, look, my experience is very like different and very biased because obviously this has been my experience so far. Right. In terms of people that kind of just want to do the 9 to 5, look, I don't think that's wrong at all. You know, I think if someone knows what they want in their life, you know, their priorities are, you know, one of my bosses said it's either you work to live or you live to work, right? Now, if you're just working to live, you know, in the sense of your hobbies are outside of the work, right? So maybe like skiing or surfing or I don't know, whatever. And you're literally just working to kind of fund that lifestyle, right? That's completely fine. I don't think that's wrong, right? And I think it's tough for an employer for sure. But I think speaking to the people that really want to do something and really like generate a very separate outcome in their life from a work perspective, I think pushing yourself when you're young is way easier, right? I think this like post-university, that 21 to 22 till about whatever, 26, 27, I think that's crucial years, you know, because you can really get your ass handed to you and it's fine because you're just a kid, you know what I mean? Like, it's not that deep. You know, really like pushing yourself later becomes a bit harder because you have different commitments, you have different responsibilities. But, you know, at this time, there's zero commitment, there's zero responsibilities. It's the best time in your life to just grind out work, you know, and really, really push yourself, you know. My philosophy is I just want to go balls to the wall, you know, like, look, I don't believe in like this, oh, I want to retire by 30, retire by 40. I think that's fucking bullshit. You know, like anyone that's actually ever done well in their lives, honestly, they want to keep working because they have no more purpose in their life if they just retire. You know, you'll find them do something else. So no one actually ever retires per se, you know. That's a myth, okay? That retirement is a myth, you know, like it's not real. Everyone's still, you know, look at my father, for example. He's what, 65? Dude, the guy does not want to retire. You know what I mean? The guy has zero. He literally, like, I think if he retired, he'd be uncomfortable. You know, like, he'd hate his life, you know, retiring. But the point I'm trying to make is, you know, now is the time, like, that gap that you have, that obviously, you know, you're young and you're in the best time of your life. You know, you're in early, mid-20s. You just want to go out and, like, have a good time. Honestly, you should. Like, 100% you should. But I think it's crucial because it sets you up for the future. You know, I think more than high school, more than university, I think this is kind of like that zone where if you really push yourself, you know, you can set yourself up well, you know, for a kind of more secure future, if you like, you know. I think it's a very per person basis. I know it's hard for employers at times to have people that are maybe just about doing the job. But, you know, if you don't, and that's fine, you know, that's what you want to do, that's fine. But look, if you want to push yourself, you need to be really fucking going at it. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not just, okay, yeah, my job's done by 5, that's it. You know, no, like if you want to do well, like you kind of go above and beyond. I remember when I was doing an internship at a VC firm, at this time I knew not, I was very young. I think this was like I think this might have been actually my internship right after university, like first year of university in Dubai. And dude, I would come in early in the morning to just there's this professor called Aswath Damodaran. I watched his entire, he's a lecturer at NYU, and I basically watched his entire valuation class through that internship. I'd come in the morning 1 hour before, and I just basically learned everything. Dude, I was technically I was way more advanced than most people just because, like, I was just doing it, you know? But also that I loved it, you know what I mean? That's why I was doing it. But, like, you need to kind of go a little bit above and beyond, you know, if you really want to. And it's not always about what I'm going to get out of it. You know, there's never always going to be like a, yes, if I do X, I'm going to get Y. You know, that's just not how it works. Just do things. You know what I mean? Push yourself, like try to do things and see where it goes, you know? But I promise you, if that's your mindset, 100%.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
You'll have good outcomes, 100%, you know. But yeah, no, I think it's tough, you know, because now the way the world is very different to what it was when you were there, right? Because I think now the ways to make money are very different, you know. Like there's so many great businesses you can do online, you know. You can be an influencer, you can be a content creator, you can do like Shopify businesses. You know, there's so many different things you can do online. You know, you don't really need that structure for corporate life. But again, these people are still also grinding it out. You know, these people are pushing themselves. It doesn't really matter what job you do. It's completely irrelevant. You know, like, but if you really want to do well and you really want to build a future in what you're doing, you need to push yourself, especially during this time, because I promise you, it is way harder. And I'm sure you know this, right? Like,
it's really interesting. I hear what you're saying, and I think it's, as an employer, I think it's actually becoming a bit of a differentiator. So when we're interviewing candidates, one of the criteria that we're looking for is someone that has got a bit of ambition, a bit of drive, and how they've demonstrated that throughout. You know, if it's for a junior role, how they demonstrated that through their early career or university. If they're a bit more senior, then of course they have hopefully more examples. But my concern is that the number of people that really want to show that they have ambition has dropped quite significantly. And for me, I find myself when I'm trying to mentor or show people, you know, and convince them that the 9-to-5 is there to kind of do your job, but outside of that is when you really learn and when you really push yourself and show value. And then once you accumulate that over a few years, you'll find that actually you're 2 or 3 years ahead of where a lot of people will be or where you should be. And then you can, again, take your craft and apply that to, you know, your softer side of skills and managing people, managing projects. So, you know, one of my businesses has a marketing arm, right? So you've got to build up your marketing knowledge, obviously, before you can start managing a project. How can you run a marketing campaign if you don't know the basics? So it'll take you maybe a year or two to think about, you know, what are the key elements of a marketing campaign? How can you look at the different mediums of how you can market an idea, a product or a service? Obviously, there's different industries, different people. You've got to just literally do a number of projects before you can get to a stage where, okay, person X, you can now manage a small client because you've built up some of those skills and you should learn the soft skills. But for me, to convince someone that this is important when they're like, yeah, but I want to go traveling and I want to, you know, I want to see the world a bit more and I want to experience different cultures and, or I want to spend more time with my family and spend more time with your friends. You kind of sit there and go, yeah, those are really important things as well. And I missed out. I haven't had a big traveling, you know, journey in my life. I haven't spent a significant amount of times with friends or family. I've had my moments, but not like 3 months off or a year off. That's because I've been super focused on my career and my businesses, etc. And I've got to a stage where I'm kind of taking a step back and saying, well, if I'm convincing someone, I think that's probably not the person that probably I should hire, because if they're not someone that wants to drive and like push the business, and that's my personality, I want to push where I want to go, then there's going to be a mismatch in expectations in what we want to deliver. So they're probably not for me, but they could be for some other great employers. If I'm sitting there and convincing someone and motivating them, look, if you want to have a certain lifestyle, you want to pay for all these nice things that you want to have, you probably need to work a little bit harder to get to a certain stage so you have the salary to then pay for all those things. And ultimately, it comes down to, I think, actions and consequences. If you work less, you probably won't progress as much because you won't hit your targets earlier. Probably means you won't earn the salary that you want to earn and you won't get the titles that you want to have. And that's, if you're okay with that, that's fine. But then that also means you don't probably have enough money to pay for maybe a lifestyle that you want. Or maybe you do. It depends, obviously, on what you want. But if you do put the effort in, the reward does come. And then there's pros and cons to both sides, obviously. Then you can pay for a better lifestyle. You can have nicer things and you can maybe, do whatever you want to do. So for me, I find myself, I'm convincing too many people at the younger generation, because what we've both said makes logical sense. I don't think people would necessarily
disagree.
They'd probably go, okay, but I weight my time a bit more preciously than the company's time. I want to live a little bit more than work a little bit more. That's kind of, as you say, to each to their own. But my concern is, when I'm sitting here convincing people that you should be working a little bit more, you should be honing your craft a little bit more because then you can take that to progress, that we're missing out on a certain chunk of people who really want to drive the world. Because if you take that on a global scale, and I don't think the UK is too different to the US, too different to maybe many Western economies. I think when you talk about the Eastern world, I think it's very different. I think there is a culture of drive and ambition that is a bit more innate. I think the Western world is a bit more sort of choice driven. I'm feeling that the Western world is going to start slowing down, and as you say, it's a competitive world. We're going to lose behind, right? We're going to leave people behind.
Yeah, no, I think it's difficult, right? Because I think it's a tough kind of pill to swallow in a bit, because in a way, because you know, you kind of realize that, look, if I don't put in this work now, it's gonna be bad for me later, but I'm really fucking up my 20s, and then what, like, by my 30s and 40s I have kids, I haven't really lived my life, you know. But that's why, you know, look, maybe this is the slight Gen Z in me talking. Look, I believe I'm actually very, like, I'm a bit of a boomer, you know, like in the sense of like my fucking like work philosophy and like mindset, I'm a little bit of a boomer. But like, I think the Gen Z side of me kind of understands a little bit about why sometimes that balance is important. But also from my experience, I realized why that balance is important. Because, dude, you can burn out pretty quickly, you know, like you can burn out very quickly, right? I think for in your situation, if you're an employer and you've hired someone and just not, and you expect more from them, you shouldn't be convincing them to fucking fire them, you know, like, not because, like, I'm not trying to, like, not in any like way, if it just does not work for you, it does not work for you, you know what I mean? I don't think you want to build a team of just superstars, you know what I mean? I don't know, that's kind of, again, I've always been around that environment, so it's always just been a case of like people are super driven, you know, like they really want to do this, you know. Obviously it's very different in other businesses, because in other businesses there's a lot more people who just kind of really just want to do the 9 to 5, you know. And in that situation where, you know, you have higher expectations, let them go, you know. Mm-hmm. Because they're not, if you're explaining to them why they should be working more, they're never going to do it. You know, it's either natural or it's not, you know, it's as simple as that. You can't really teach that, you know, you can't really talk someone into that, you know, like this is the way they fundamentally operate, you know? And that's why I think good for them, you know, in a sense, if you know that, dude, honestly, I think that's the best. I really don't look down on anyone who's like, I'm honestly just working for this 9 to 5, because dude, like, they want to do other things in their life, you know, and maybe that kind of drive will come later. You know, it could happen. You just don't know, because maybe what they're doing is just not their passion and they're just doing it for the sake of doing it, like we talked about, right? And that's completely fine. Like, again, we're not talking about it from an employer perspective. We're talking about it from a general human perspective, you know. It's fine. Like, it's not the end of the world, you know. It's okay. Like, it's not your priority. It's not your priority. I don't think that's wrong. It's actually very good. You know what you want out of your life. And I think you'll actually live a happier life if you actually roughly know what you kind of want to do, you know? So I have no problem with it. I don't see anything wrong with it. I think work-life balance is kind of misconstrued. I think the term work-life balance, it's, by the way, it's fundamentally flawed, because if you think about it, generally speaking, you're working 5 days out of the 7 days of a week. So the majority of your time anyway is working. So there can never fundamentally ever be a balance per se, you know? Yes, okay, maybe after work and stuff, you know, but most of your life, you're actually, if you think about it, most of your life, you're actually spending working, right? I don't think what people are looking for is work-life balance as much. I think what people, honestly, the people that I, look, I have a lot of friends in California and SF and the whole tech scene, and dude, a lot of them, the time that they're doing with that balance part of it, they're actually just spending either building businesses, working on themselves, like, you know, learning something. It's productive, you know, it's productive, and it actually probably is helping them in their roles and their jobs. I very much realize the value of sometimes you just got to let people do their thing, you know, because if as long as they've proven to you that, you know, they're committed, they're good at what they do, if you just let them be, I promise you the outcomes are better. If you force it down their throat, it's much worse. And that's why I think as an employer, if you're having to have that conversation, that person isn't really just meant for the role. You know what I mean? I think
it's really interesting you say that, because I completely agree, where if you're forcing something down someone's throat, it never works. It never works. Because I've seen it happen to my other colleagues, where people are just like, just do the task, get on with it, you have 24 hours. And you can see the person's morale, you can see them become instantly disaffected, and, you know, obviously they bitch about the boss, you know, 5 minutes later. Yeah. So like, you, as an employer, you kill off that person, you know, wanting to work for you, wanting to support your vision by shoving things down. And I think where I find myself is that, what I try to do is help let people buy into the vision of why we're doing what we're doing, right? So you might not like this task, but you like the vision. So, but as part of that vision, there are a bunch of tasks that people have to do. It's better that X, Y, and Z person do these part of the tasks and you have to do this one. Now, it might not be exactly what you want to do, but you get it because it's part of the vision. And that's the convincing. I think people buy into that more and more. But sometimes there's just, there are the proactive things that you need to do within a workforce, right? You have to, you know, think two or three steps ahead. And I think that proactivity is a big differentiator again. I think if you're ambitious and you have drive, you think about the business as if it's your own business. Absolutely. If you're just someone that comes in to do tasks, you just get given the tasks and you're very reactive. So you can instantly see a differentiator with the team. But for me, I'm very blessed, actually. My team is excellent. I'm very, very happy across all the businesses. Everyone that's there buys into that vision, or as far as I know. I'll find out soon. Performance reviews are coming up. but it's like...
Good luck, Apex Accountancy and Business Cloud. Hope you all get good bonuses.
touch wood. But it's one of those things where it's a weird one for me, because I don't want to have to force anything down anyone's throat. Because I don't want to do that. As an employer, I don't want to do that. I don't want to tell people to do something they don't want to do. At the same time, I'm sort of like, you're here because you've got this wonderful vision. And I see this a lot with clients when they've got actually employees that would contact us and be like, look, we're not happy with this. Or they're part of the finance team and they're trying to work with us. And we're like, oh man, John's on a mad one today. Something's going on. Something like, what's wrong with him? And I'm like, I don't know. It's just part and parcel of yeah. him being him. And so you get to a stage as an employer, you want your workforce to obviously like you and to, you know, have some sort of positive feelings towards you. But at the end of the day, you've got a business to execute. So that relationship is always going to be fluctuating to some extent. At the same time, I find it difficult to force someone to do anything. If you don't want to do it, then as you say, don't be here. They probably shouldn't be here. It's extreme. I don't think I've ever faced that circumstance. I try to explain to someone why we have to do this task and why you're doing it, and then try to leave from the front in the sense that I'm here to help you with the task. I'm not just going to give it to you and walk out the door. I'm here to help. And that's part of being a good leader. And sometimes you don't see that with the current workforce, where you've got managers that just need something done because they're getting it from the top and they just tell people to do a task and move on. So what I'm trying to say is that relationship of doing tasks, morale, disaffection, I think is quite deep within the Gen Z workforce, where they go, if they don't want to do something, they probably wouldn't necessarily do it. And they're better at saying no, which I think is always a good thing. But I think you have to come with a no but. There's a no, but this is a better way to do it. Or no, we don't have to do this task because I can create this better process around never have to do this task again. Or no, but someone else can do that and I'm going to focus on this. You know, it's very...
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Very much it's very much a challenging world between mid-management, which is pretty much where most millennials are nowadays. I think the oldest millennial will be in their early 40s. So maybe some of them are starting to enter the C-suite now. But there is that clash. And I want to be able to say to someone who's younger, who maybe prefers their own life as their own life, to say, if you want to prioritize that, that's absolutely fine. But your career is not going to progress where you want it to. So you have to manage your expectations. But if you're spending your 5 to 9 in building another business and doing something that's productive and for you, then have that expectation as well, that maybe this job is there just to pay for kind of your bills and practicality. But then when you're ready to start your business, then go hard.
Dude, look, I think this whole, this Gen Z, like, allegation of, like, work, I think it's fucking bullshit, you know? Like, I don't think that's true at all, you know? Yeah. I think human beings fundamentally don't change, you know what I mean? Your needs, like, what I'm trying to say is your basic needs have not changed. Everyone still knows they need money to survive, to have, like, their lifestyle, etc. They know what's required to get that, right? So fundamentally, it's not like people have become lazier, right? Because the way the argument has become is, like, okay, if you're a Gen Z, you're lazier, you bitch more, like, you know, you complain more. Like, the difference now is, I feel like with, and I think this is way better, is I think people of my sort of generation, essentially, they're just a lot more aggressive in what they want, you know, which I think is a good thing. You know, like if you know what you want, go for it, you know. I think there's always been lazy people fundamentally going back to the time, you know, like for sure there was always people just doing the 9 to 5, you know, and that's always been the case, you know. But there's always also people that are pushing themselves. You know, it's, I don't think that's fundamentally changed in any way. So that's why I think these allegations that Gen Z are like lazy or anything is fucking bullshit. You know, I just don't think that's true at all.
Well, I think it's interesting because each generation says the same thing about the one below. So like, yes. So like Gen X said the same thing about millennials. I mean, the big accusation of my generation is that we're buying too much avocado toast and like, having coffees outside. So that's why we can't buy houses, which makes no fucking sense. And then you've got boomers saying to Gen Xers, well, you didn't work as hard as us because we're the ones that are, with the golden generation, we've built everything. And then the golden generation have built everything because they're the guys that fought the wars. And they're telling the boomers, you guys are lazy. And that's a tough one.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Those guys probably
that's
have
where you could draw the line. You know? Yeah. Yeah, bro, you had it worse.
Those guys so could sorry. Definitely say it. But it's, I can see that kind of allegation being passed down. But as someone that really wants to help young people in particular to get into the workforce and to do more and be better, I feel like there is I think you're right. I think they know what they want more. They're a lot more focused on it. But I can't help, the practical person in me is kind of also saying, do your traveling for a couple of years, you know, find yourself, do it. That's your thing. But that's 2 years you're not honing a craft. That's 2 years where you're not working. That's 2 years where you might be building up other skill sets, which could help you later in life, but it's not as tangible as perhaps, and it's a bit more uncertain than perhaps other pathways. So my advice is always follow your path. That I don't think you should be withheld from it. I don't think there's any judgment. I certainly don't judge people if they want to do some traveling. I couldn't care less. Go for it. I didn't do it, but I think that's a bad thing. I should have done more. But at the same time, don't expect to walk into a job paying X amount or above average when you come back. Or don't expect to be able to progress in your career as quickly as others because you're a bit older. Like, there are actions and there are consequences. And fundamentally, if you're someone that has a job, you have a task to do, and you either do it well, average, or badly, broadly. If you do things really well, consistently, you will progress. If you do things averagely, consistently, you'll progress less. If you do things badly, you'll get fired. So I think that's the worry I have. And I think that is recognized. I think it's just not valued. I think it's just, I still want to do my thing.
I mean, dude, that I still fundamentally believe that's not different to any other generation. You know?
No,
like,
I agree.
Like, I think everyone, maybe they don't realize it, but like, I think everyone subconsciously knows the actions and consequences. Like, subconsciously, everyone's aware of like, this decision affects this in this way. You know, like, realistically, everyone knows. And I don't think that's changed. Like, I think it's exactly the same as previous generations. People knew what they were... There were still people traveling in your generation. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's just a case of what I think the argument you're trying to make is they are a lot, at least in the workplace, they are a lot more transparent with what they want from their employer, right? Which is a very different dynamic compared to what it was before, right? The culture before was like, I'm gonna do what you're gonna tell me to do, right? Whereas now it's a bit more like, I'm gonna do what you tell me to do, but I also have an opinion, right? I think the latter is way better. You know, I think transparency in a like, and being able to not put your boss on a pedestal is actually a little bit better. Like, and I think the reason why is they respect, like, I think people above will respect you if you treat them. If I'm talking to you and you're my boss, and I just make that distance. You get what I'm trying to say? I make that emotional relationship difference or distance. It's harder for you, or it's harder for me to build credibility, right? Obviously, you're absolutely right. It needs to come with respect. You know, you cannot be disrespectful, but, and like you said, no, but, you know, this is what I think we should be doing. I don't think a lot of people are just going and saying, yeah, no, I'm just not going to do that, because they'd just be fired. You know what I mean? Like, you know, don't do the fucking job. You know, like, why would you do it? So that's why I just fundamentally don't believe like our generation has somehow revamped like the entire, it's just today business has fundamentally changed because through COVID, you know, we started the culture of work from home. I think the world has changed, and it's just a function that dude, are you telling me? My bosses love work from home. Like, a lot of my colleagues love, like, my senior bosses used to love work from home because they got more time with their families, etc. You know, it's just a case of you need to be able to have employees that you trust that are actually committed to their job. You know, they're trying to better themselves. That's how it should be, you know? I really, really just don't buy these, like, Gen Z or software work-wise, etc., you know? Like,
I think yeah. The same is said for each, like,
exactly.
Each generation.
Like you said, exactly. Dude, I remember in school, wouldn't your seniors tell you, yeah. oh, you had it easier, you know? But I, even in my banking job, you know, people will tell me, oh, like, I had it much worse than you. Dude, like, everyone has it bad, you know? It's just how it is, like... So I don't think fundamentally anything has changed, you know.
Plus you play the cards you're dealt with, right? Like, as in, I used to, my dad used to tell me, like, back in the day, they used to do these things called O levels, which are the equivalent of GCSEs.
Yes.
And they'd be like, look at my maths O level compared to yours. And I'm like, yeah, but like, I can't change my GCSE. I'm doing it. Okay. I can't change the structure. Like, okay, it was harder back in the day, but you know, I can't change that.
But you will have different challenges. Right. Like, I don't think, yes, something gets easier, something gets harder, you know, like, I just look, we'll obviously get into more detail with this later on, but
yeah.
It frustrates me that, you know, like, the conversation around Gen Z is, oh, they're lazier, or they're this. I think that's far from true. Most of the people I know, they're grinding, you know what I mean? Like, they're working hard, and it's not just like a finance thing. I think most of my friends that work in non-finance roles, like, they're working hard, you know, they're working as hard as anyone else, you know. All they're asking for is a little bit more balance, in the sense of, like, not balance, I think balance, let's not go back to work-life balance, but like but like, I think what they're kind of looking for is better, either more responsibility, or they're looking for better control over their life, you know. That's really what it is. I think it's a control thing, you know. They kind of want to be able to choose, okay, I don't mind working for you 18 hours a day, but like, allow me to have my Saturday off. You know, I'm just giving you, like, a bad example, but
I get your point.
It's a banking. It's a very banking example, by the way. And the bankers know what I mean.
Along, like,
I
get it.
I know this sounds very. This is real, by the way. Fucking real, you know, like, but yeah, I think the conversation around it is too politicized. I think it's too. There's become polar camps for something that's actually not that deep. You know, everyone is benefiting from work from home. I think it is important, however, to have a degree of office time. But look, I think it just depends on the industry, depends on the needs of the industry. Like, I don't think finance people could work from home all days of the week for the whole year. You know, just not how, because it's a business, a person, it's a personal business. You know what I mean? Like, it's a face to face kind of interaction thing. It's not fundamentally possible. If you're working in tech, maybe it's possible. You know, maybe you really don't need that. But even still, I think that you still need that in tech. You know, so. I don't know, man. I just feel like this conversation has become too politicized. I think we're literally, this is just what the other generation wanted, but we're too afraid to ask, and we're just asking. That's pretty much all it is, you know?
I'm really glad you pushed back hard, because I've tried to put forward the arguments that are said. And some of them I resonate with, some of them I don't. I think the definite difference with Gen Z is that they're more willing to speak up. There's more transparency. I think you're right. They put up with less bullshit. I think when I look back at certain parts of my career, but there was a level of I wouldn't say abuse, but like, they would just be like, fucking do it. Like, and there's
abuse now as well. No, yeah. It depends where you work.
Wait for part three. But isn't like,
No, I'm not saying that.
But the relative, like, there are some moments in my career I really should have, like, looked at my boss and been like, what the fuck did you just tell me? That is nonsense.
Yeah, but I don't think, by the way, I don't think, sorry, I'm sorry, definitely. But like, I don't think anyone today is also telling their boss, oh, fuck you, you know, like, you're wrong, you know, like, I don't think that's actually happening. I think they're just being a little bit more vocal. That's it. Not in a disrespectful way, they're just being a bit more vocal. You know, I think that's all that is, you know.
I think that's a great thing, because certainly the conversations I've had with some of the younger members of the team, I really enjoyed, because I'm like, okay, I get your viewpoint. I wouldn't do it because I'm not you, but you're you. So I can't force you to be like me. You're in this role, you've decided to go another path, or you want to do some more traveling, you want to go and build another business. How can I support you? You know, how can we mentor you over some time, or can you stick with us for a couple more months so that you can move into another role when you have a job? Or like, how can we help you? And I wish more, I'm not saying that I do things well, I just think that this is a better approach, because obviously I wouldn't do it otherwise. But I think if employers were more supportive of employees and what they want to do outside of work, I think there'll be a better conversation around what people want to be doing inside of work. And I think that once you understand your team better, you can pick up on who they are as people, what drives them, and ultimately make your team better, because you've got the person, right? Yes, you can fire them and bring in someone else, but then you create a toxic environment. If you brought someone in, you really like them, you learn about them, you brought them in for a reason, there's probably an element of competency, intelligence, drive, ambition, passion for something. So you want to take that and use it to the best of your ability. I always tell people when I'm interviewing, I'm a facilitator of your success. So what can I do for you? I have this structure. You want to be part of it. These are the standards. You've hit them. Great. This is what I think you should be doing. But if you think you should be doing something else, you're doing it. I'm looking at it from a bird's eye view, looking at it as a frontline soldier. You know better. So tell me. And I think that I've had better conversations, I think, with the younger members of the team, because they're sitting there being like, this task, I don't like it. I think it doesn't make sense. But I get it has to be done. Can we bring in some tech to deal with it? So we've brought in more software. We've used AI a lot more across the businesses. Stuff that, you know, I broadly understand, but, you know, I don't have the skill set to execute because these guys have dealt with it. So I think as millennials and Gen Z work more together over time, especially when millennials become into the proper decision-making seats and start owning more assets as the great wealth transfer comes through over the next 10 or 15 years, I think we're going to see a lot stronger workforce. I think we're going to see a more tumultuous workforce, probably more turnover, but I think we're going to see better workplaces. I think we're going to see better people. I think we're going to see more entrepreneurial workplaces. I think we're going to see people having better conversations, and definitely a lot more transparency, which I think will ultimately help.
Yeah, no, I'm not concerned about the future of work. I am in a different way, and we'll get into that later. But I'm not concerned about the future in the sense of assuming the status quo. I think we're actually heading in the right direction. You know what I mean? I think I fundamentally just disagree with the notion that the changes that are happening today are negative. I think obviously it needs to be managed, but I think we're figuring it out. You know, this is just a process of there's a transformational change going on, and we're just going through the process of figuring it out. You know, I think that's all it is. But I think generally speaking, we're trending towards the right direction. And I think this generation is just carrying forward a torch that, to be honest, you guys even started. You know, I think the relationships, if you look through work, things have moved towards a certain direction naturally. You know, You can't look at this specific event. I look at it as like a long-term trend. And honestly, we've been tending towards this for the last 50, 60 years, you know? Mm. So I don't think this is specifically just a Gen Z, the last 5 years thing. I think there's definitely been some events that have catalyzed the change, but in general, we have been moving towards this. Mm. So I think we're fine. You know, I think we're fine. I think it's just a case of we're kind of going through the teething issues. You know, that's basically what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I fundamentally believe the changes that are happening today are good, both for the employer and the employee. And I'm fairly positive the outcomes will be better. Now, obviously, there are some things that are not as good, but, you know, I think some of this more social stuff, like a little bit of the free speech stuff, you know, some of the censorship, you know, it's tough, you know, but I think generally speaking, though, we are heading towards a better direction for sure. Yeah.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.